Blog Talk Radio.
Comes up whenever people talk about a chef who has developed such fine culinary skills and delivers very fine meals, gourmet style. It's quite a kind of achievement. And we see this attempt to follow the precepts of Escoffier in these culinary schools, which cost as much as $25,000 to $26,000 a year, and there's no guarantee, especially in this economy, they will get a top chef job in a big hotel or a big restaurant or even listed in the Michelin Guide, which is also French. Also today is the birthday of Howard Hanson, great musical teacher, composer, symphonies, the legend of Beowulf, his romantic symphony. He also either started or put this school on the map, the Eastman School of Music in upstate New York. I think it was funded by people connected to Eastman Kodak. He was born in, Howard Hanson was born in Wahoo, Nebraska, which is also the home, was the home of Daryl Zanuck, the great a movie producer and director of such films as The Longest Day, these spectacular films that he produced. Movie star born today, Elsa Lancaster, was the wife, she played Bride of Frankenstein, appropriate for Halloween. She was the wife of Charles Laughton, who was gay in his private life. He died at 65. It's interesting. Now, a book hit, his two most famous films, the one he got the Academy Award for, was Henry VIII. I think she played in that film with him, and also Mutiny on the Bounty. Now, new books come out about Captain Bligh. Now, Charles Laughton played Bligh, and Clark Gable played Fletcher Christian. And there's some revisionist history that's come out. One thing about Captain Bligh, he rose through the ranks, and he ended up being a rear admiral, no pun intended. He was quite a navigator, and he was set adrift with just a compass and a rowboat with a little sail, and he managed to get to, I think it was 1,000 miles to the nearest English colony, and he got another ship and went in pursuit of Fletcher Christian and the mutineers. Fascinating story. There's been three movies, one with the original with Charles Laughton, Clark Gable, the other one with Marlon Brando and Trevor Howard, and then there's another one, I think, with Anthony Hopkins. Also at birthday, another Englishman, Evelyn Waugh, that's a man, a great novelist, writer, he was born today. Those of us who had the polio shot, Dr. Jonas Salk was born today. And then, of course, this Olympic athlete, Bruce Jenner, was born today. And you can curse Microsoft. That's what Steve Jobs said about Bill Gates. He wasn't creative, but he was born today in 1955. Also among the deaths today, again, he was born on this week, but he also died today, the father of the English Navy, Alfred the Great. He died, King of England, Also in 1492, Christopher Columbus discovered Cuba. And in the United States, in 16, it wasn't the United States, but in the colonies, Harvard University was founded today. Some people wish it wasn't. I think it started originally as, like a lot of those English, British colony schools, like Yale, started principally as a divinity school, although nothing divine about some of these people that come out of Harvard. And it was what Harry Truman once said, if I listened to all the advice from these people from Harvard, the country would be in even worse shape. Today, Eli Whitney went for a patent for his cotton gin, which revolutionized cotton picking, no pun intended, in the South, and it's one of the things that hastened the demise of slavery. And here, we wish this a demise when they brought it up. 1919, the Volstead Act was passed over Woodrow Wilson's veto. The Volstead Act started prohibition. I highly recommend that you see the PBS series Prohibition. It's very accurate, very interesting, and there are a lot of things in there, a lot of episodes that it's history recycled, revisited, real estate speculation, crashing, stock market manipulations, wild sex, drinking, and all of that. A great series. Ken Burns does great work. Also on this day, he was not a lawyer. This is interesting. Benito Mussolini took over the Italian government. He marched on Rome. He was a school teacher, an atheist, and also an editor. And in 1929, the first child was born on an airplane. I wonder what the fate was. I wonder if they had a parachute for him. And in 1936, FDR dedicated the Statue of Liberty on its 50th anniversary. 1958, on this date, after Pius XII died, the Catholic Church decided, well, we need to bring some fresh air in. I think the word is, I can't pronounce the Italian word, forgive me. Anyway, a fat Italian cardinal, Angelo Roncalli, who was also the papal nuncio, that means ambassador to Turkey during World War II, and he helped save a lot of Jews. And Roncalli was elected pope, and he became John the 23rd, and he started these ecumenical councils and some controversy about some of the things that he did to, quote, open up the church and air out the cobwebs. Nikita Khrushchev on his date removed the missiles from Cuba. They were offensive, and that was one of John Kennedy's foreign policy successes. And then on this date, Constantine, one of the last of the Roman pagan emperors, defeated Maximus, and his mother was a Christian. Those were Catholics in those days, and she prayed for his conversion, and supposedly he saw a sign in the sky, a cross that said, "In this sign you shall conquer," and he defeated Maximin the pagan, and then Constantine responded to his mother's prayers and became a Roman Catholic and was baptized. Since there's been some flip-flopping by the politicians on the Planned Parenthood issue, and I think it was James O'Keefe. Some people call him the Pimpernel from New Jersey. He's a very sharp young man. He's got a great future if he does work that's accurate and honest, and if he admits his mistake when he makes mistakes, as we all do. And we wish him luck, but we are not associated with his Project Veritas. We've got our own Veritas USA, and it's been around since 1988, and we continue to do our work. Anyway, and our paper is only going to come out every maybe 4 or 5 months because we're concentrating on audio and video at our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. Anyway, Margaret Sanger is very important now. I was unable to make the connection for sure between Margaret Sanger and Adolf Hitler, but we will replay the interviews with her on her views on birth control and all that, which she got into trouble for. So here we go.
Margaret Sanger opened the first birth control clinic in the United States back in 1916. Birth control was a dirty word. The police threw her into jail, as they were to do seven more times during her crusade, a crusade that still faces the reasoning but unalterable opposition of the Roman Catholic Church. That crusade kept Mrs. Sanger away from her children for long periods. It helped to break up her first marriage, and she suffered constant, harrowing social abuse. Mrs. Sanger, in view of all of that, let me ask you this first of all. Why did you do it? I realize that you had an intellectual conviction that birth control was a boon to mankind, but I'm sure that others have that conviction too. And so what I'd like to know is this. What events, what emotions in your life made Margaret Sanger a crusader for birth control?
Well, Mr. Wallace, it's hard to say that any one thing has made one do this or that. I think from the very beginning, I came with a large family. My mother died young, 11 children, made an impression on me as a child. I was a trained nurse, went among the people. I saw women who asked to have some means whereby they wouldn't have to have another pregnancy too early after the last child, the last abortion, which many of them had. So there's a number of things that are, one after the other, that really made you feel that you had to do something.
There are some other possible reasons that suggest themselves on reading your biography by Lawrence later. Your mother, as you say, died prematurely after bearing 11 children. She was born a Catholic, was she not?
She was born a Catholic, yes.
And your father was a sort of a village atheist who clashed with church authorities. And because of his atheism, his earnings dwindled under community pressure. You and your brothers and sisters were known as, quote, children of the devil, end quote. Could it be then that, in part at least, you were driven emotionally toward the birth control movement because of antagonism toward the church, because that was a way to fight the church?
No, I don't think I had anything of the kind in mind. I was what I would call a born humanitarian. I don't like to see people suffer. I don't like to see cruelty, even to this day. And in nursing, you see a great deal of cruelty and unnecessary suffering. At that time, there was no opposition as far as the church was concerned, any church. It was mainly the law, the federal law and state law that one had to think of. The church was not in my mind at all.
Well, then going after your motives, and I will press you just a little bit more about that and then get to the specifics of this evening. But in your motive, in the movement, is it possible that the movement itself, the feeling of wanting to do anything that you felt was important, that perhaps that moved you a good deal? Because the fact remains that you led a movement against overwhelming pressures that stemmed back for centuries, and in doing so, according to your autobiography, you even left your first husband. And you wrote this to a friend. Mrs. Sanger, you said, where is the man to give me what the movement gives in joy and interest and freedom? Now, what was this joy, this freedom that you craved?
Well, I don't remember that letter, written, but I think that it was not a question of the of marriage at all. There was a certain satisfaction in doing something that was going to alleviate the suffering of women in particular, and I was quite a feminist at the time, I naturally didn't want to see women take all the suffering of childbearing and of pregnancies. So it was a pleasure in a sense, I think, that you were striking at an archaic law, which it was, put on the statute book by Anthony Comstock some years ago. And that no one had stood up against it, no one had tried to change the law. And at that time, not even a doctor had a right to use the United States mails and common carriers for books, for learning, for anything that he had to do with this question. It was considered obscene. The whole question was considered obscene.
Mrs. Sanger, you have helped to spread the birth control movement not only here in the United States, but in Europe and the Orient as well. Why? Why is birth control of such vital importance internationally? Is it just to save women suffering? Is that the only reason in your mind?
Well, not entirely. The population question is a great concern today, and the rate at which the births come in to the... We're saving them now. At one time, when children died, they didn't have the food. Today, our population all over the world is getting certainly better consideration and better conditions than they had at the time that I was there. I went to every country because I was invited. And I didn't spread go into the country myself. I was invited to go to Japan and to speak there, have 8 lectures on the question of birth control and peace.
Well, do you believe that birth control is essential if we want to keep millions of people across the world from starving? Is that your thesis?
Say it again.
Do you feel that birth control is essential to keep millions of people across the world from starving?
Well, I think the birth control, if you keep the population more or less static until you pick up your resources, certainly you prevent their starving.
Well, what's more important, birth control or picking up the resources?
Well, picking up the resources, there's just a limit to that, too. There's just so much, take Japan. And she cannot feed. They've had the best experts come there when MacArthur was there. Mm-hmm. And the best experts have said they have 20 million more people than they can feed. She's got to be fed outside. And in some way, she's got to have that kind of help if she's going to keep them fighting.
But certainly around the world, there is potential agricultural land that is not being properly used now. Just this past year, on May 21st, the New York Times summarized an important study of the world Professor James Bonner of the California Institute of Technology. Professor Bonner says the world is not using 1 billion acres of potential agricultural land, and he adds that if this land were used and present agricultural land were improved, the entire world could be fed adequately, even if the population increased by 1/3 in the next 50 years.
Oh, Mr. Wallace, you hear so many...
That was cut short. Now we're going to hear what Mr. Rose said. This is it was a long speech, and we will play part of it. his when he was a candidate running back in 2008, and here's part two because that's also long.
It's time to turn the page on policies that failed to deal with the tragedy of 10,000 American teenagers getting an STD every day. Of 55 contracting HIV and another 2,400 becoming pregnant. It's time to turn the page on a stance that refuses compassionate support to victims of rape and sexual assault, not even to the brave service women fighting for our country who aren't getting the support they need when they come home as veterans of the United States of America. If they're fighting for us, they should be getting the services that they deserve. It's time to turn the page on a policy that provides over $1.5 billion to teach abstinence in our schools, but refuses to teach basic science and basic contraception. Sam, we've been through these fights in Illinois. We're going to be in these fights here in Washington. There's nothing wrong with science. It actually has made our lives better. Let's teach science to our kids. We need to make choices about what happens before pregnancy. It's a false argument to say that the only way to prevent disease and unintended pregnancy is abstinence education, just as it is a false argument to say that the only way is through contraception. As Martin Luther King used to say, it's not either or, it's both and. There's a moral component to prevention, and we shouldn't be shy about acknowledging it as parents. As family members, we need to encourage young people to show reverence towards sexuality and intimacy. We need to teach that not just to the young girls, we need to teach it to those young boys. But even as we are teaching those lessons, We must never be willing to consign a teenage girl to a lifetime of struggle because of a lack of access to birth control, or a lifetime of illness because she doesn't understand how to protect herself. That's just common sense. There's common ground on behalf of common sense. There we have an opportunity to move forward and agree. People of all faiths, the members of Ariana and my church, Trinity, United Church of Christ, or the United Synagogue of Conservative Judaism, understand that we cannot ignore that abstinence and fidelity may too often be the ideal and not the reality. We need more programs in our communities, like the National Black Church Initiative, which empowers our young people by teaching them about reproductive health, sex education, and teen pregnancy within the context of the African American faith tradition. We need more leadership at the federal level. That's why I'm an original co-sponsor of the Prevention First Act to guarantee equity in contraceptive coverage, provide comprehensive sex education in our schools, and offer rape victims factually accurate information about emergency contraception. We need to tackle the tragedy of unintended teen pregnancy. When 160,000 teens become pregnant every year, and half of Latina and black teens will become mothers before reaching their 20s. It's not just a public health problem. If we reduce teen pregnancy, we can also reduce poverty. Now, the good news is that there's been a decline in the teen birth rate, in part due to the outstanding work of Planned Parenthood. But we all know that we can do more. That's why I've been working on this in Congress. Today, I introduced the Communities of Color Teen Pregnancy Prevention Act to increase funding for programs to combat this problem in communities all across the country, working with grassroots organizations to increase education. We need to ensure that pharmaceutical companies can offer discounted drugs to safety net providers like Planned Parenthood and university clinics so that access to affordable contraception is not just a privilege for the few, it's an option for all women. It's amazing how many women tell me the stories of how important it was for Planned Parenthood to provide them services when they were in college and they did not have the health insurance or the access to a regular doctor that they needed to be able to have somebody they could trust to deal with so many of their basic and essential health issues. And we can't stop there, because we know that there's more at stake, that the struggle for equality is also a struggle for opportunity. You've worked in the community. You've seen women and families trying to keep pace. You've seen our daughters hit the glass ceiling and come to closed doors. The social contract in this country was made for a time when most women stayed at home with the kids. And even though this time is long past, we still have social policies designed around the old model, the, as Justice Ginsburg said, ancient notion of women's place in the family. And so women still receive less than pay, less than health benefits, less than pensions, less than Social Security. When women go on maternity leave, America is the only country in the industrialized world to let them go unpaid. If you're a single mom, like my mom was, and you can't afford health insurance for yourself, and you're trying to figure out whether your kids are going to be covered or not, the message from this current administration is tough luck. That's the break. The truth is, too often our daughters don't have the same opportunity as our sons. But that's not who we are. That's not the America we want for our children. And I am absolutely convinced that we can make this change. We can update the social contract so that caring for a newborn baby isn't a 3-month break, it's a paid leave, so that all of our children have basic health care. We should be ashamed that the President of the United States is fighting providing health insurance coverage to all children because he's worried that socialized medicine. He would rather fight an ideological battle than make certain that children who have preventable illnesses like asthma are getting regular checkups instead of going to the emergency room, which is costing all of us more money. We can update the social contract so that our kids can go to school earlier and stay longer, that a mom can stay home with a sick child without getting a pay slip. We can go to work, and she can go to work knowing that there's affordable, quality child care for her children, so that more families can stay together and prosper, and our daughters have no limits to chase their dreams. Thank you, sir. But first, we've got to get rid of the can't do, won't do, won't even try style of government that we've had in Washington over the last several years. An administration that says we don't have the money to do it, but we've got $10 billion a month to fight a war in Iraq that should have never been authorized and should have never been waged. We can find the money to make sure our daughters have the same rights as our son. We can make this change. We can make this change, but first we have to get rid of the politics and discuss with who's up and who's down, and the politics of power for power's sake, the politics of cynicism and fear, fear above all of the future. This kind of change is about more than any one judicial appointment or law, as important as they may be. It's also about leadership. It's about not settling for what America is, but working for what America might be. You know, I'm here as a candidate for the presidency of the United States of America because I had a grandmother who never got more than a high school education. But she worked on a bomber assembly line. She was Rosie the Riveter. And then went to work after she and my grandfather had married and her daughter had been born. She went to work as a secretary and worked her way up to become vice president of a bank, the same bank where she started as a secretary, and ended up being the financial rock for our entire family. I'm here because...
Now, we'll bring part three of this Monday at our new time, 3:30. One of the other interesting things today, this will be up on the website, an update on U.S. Navy sailor Stephen Airey, one of the biggest cover-ups in U.S. judicial history. Kamala Harris was an employee of the corrupt district attorney Terrence Hallinan back in 1999. She was in that office. I don't know if she had anything to do with this case. Anyway, somehow she got elected as California State Attorney General. It's a controversial election even now. And she filed a four-page brief, in effect saying the federal government had no authority or no jurisdiction over its military personnel. And they have blocked the parole of U.S. Navy sailor Stephen Airey, when they never had jurisdiction to try him in the first place, and there were forged papers to get him off the ship, abuse while he was in the San Francisco County Jail, denial of medical care for his broken hand, the concealment of his male assailant's AIDS, venereal disease, STD, tuberculosis, all these communicable disease factors and questions were not answered, and the corpse was burned, and the ashes were dumped in San Francisco Bay on April 1st, 1996. Anyway, we'll be back Monday on our new time. It seems to work out better at 3:30, and we'll end with our usual theme. Whoop, what happened here? We're still trying to work out this new system. I like it, but it's... So some other questions. Here we go. So we'll end with politics and poker, which is what some of these politicians, they may be able to play poker. It's more honest.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Toss the five. Pony. Up to you.
I'm in.
So am I.
My wine.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We got a
pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace Bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the sound?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Yeah, a lot of things here goes. Maybe more debates, which you don't really need, I don't think. So we'll be back Monday at our new time, 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Good night.